Hello, everyone. I'm Jeff Hammond, Senior Associate Editor with Commercial Property Executive, and I'm pleased to be here today for our podcast with Origin Construction, which provides a range of general contracting services across the commercial real estate spectrum. Today, I'm joined by Origin co-founder AJ Mueller and South Florida division leader Jay Richmond to discuss how COVID-19 has impacted construction across asset types as property owners and tenants adjust to the new normal. AJ began his career in construction in 2003 when he joined Amicon Construction as a project superintendent, later becoming a partner with the firm. Mueller and longtime colleague John Wood co-founded Origin in August 2020. Jay serves as Origin's South Florida division leader, where he oversees all aspects of commercial projects in the region. He possesses nearly two decades of experience in commercial real estate project planning, project management, site development, and more. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
So let's just jump right in. First, I would like to get kind of a bird's eye view. As the country is still continuing to deal with the effects of the pandemic, how are projects faring across property sectors?
Well, from a high level view, I think projects that were already underway have had little to no impact from the pandemic beyond some industry-wide safety protocols for the job sites and for our teams in the field. Also, we've been dealing with a lot of modified procedures by all the individual municipalities with inspections and permit review. But anything that was a new start and was planned to being started during the pandemic up till now, we've had some project delays. Some have stalled their starts simply to, you know, wait out the pandemic's impact to their business so that they can make financial decisions on projects that may have already been approved but may need to be modified budget-wise or even project planning and design-wise. But some are making fast decisions to modify their design or their scope of work to accommodate what we're all calling the new normal, but still pushing forward to complete or at least get projects started as soon as possible. So the timeline has been impacted across the board.
Okay, I see. And I was reading an August report from the New Horizons Foundation, which indicated that contractor worker productivity had dropped by nearly 20% as a result of these new mitigation measures across the board. From your perspective, how have the safety measures impacted the projects overall?
This is Jay Richmond. Yes, the new mitigation measures have affected production as well as just time on the job site. Number one is everyone's safety and health concerns for not only the job site and those on the job site, but any surrounding areas. If we're working in an occupied building, building out a new tenant space, obviously we're passing through common corridors, we're passing through main lobbies, elevators, all of these areas which, you know, could carry some potential problems, you know. So what we've been doing is following CDC guidelines, doing self-screening evaluations, doing temperature checks. We actually have each worker come in and fill out a health report, sign it, we document it, we keep that on record. And then, of course, social distancing. Social distancing, working on a job site can become quite challenging, especially if it's a smaller space that you're working in. Not every space is, you know, 100,000 square feet where we can really spread out. If we're working in a 5,000 square foot office space or a retail space that's 1,500 square feet, yeah, it becomes very challenging. You have to stagger shifts. That costs more money. So it's definitely been challenging. We've been able to override those challenges and become very flexible. But at the same time, if a case does occur and is reported on site, then what we have to do is we have to immediately stop work, halt the job site, clear everybody out. We have to go through a fogging and desanitation process, disinfecting process on site to clean the site. And then, of course, we're changing out crew members to keep the project running while everybody is either self-quarantined or getting tested. So yes, there's definitely been a lot of changes. Safety, health is number one, and we have to protect that at all costs.
What are some longer-term challenges the construction industry could face as a result of social distancing measures?
Long-term challenges of what we're seeing is really trying to create the schedule so that it reflects what's going to happen on the job site, especially when it comes to manpower, especially when it comes to keeping social distancing guidelines. Staggered shifts are definitely something that we've already been doing, so we keep and limit the amount of workers in one space to a safe measure. And obviously, if we're switching to day and night, if it's a smaller space, like a retail space, then yeah, that's going to not only drive up costs, but also increase schedule time. If work's being done at night, obviously the next day is when the work is inspected, whether that's a city inspector or the supervisor making sure that everything was done properly. So you lose some time there, you know, planning for, oh, this wasn't done right, we're going to have to fix it tonight, you know, the next night. So it breaks the cycle of streamlining the construction process. I mean, I think long-term is just going to extend project schedules.
Construction costs on the national level have begun to drop with the onset of the pandemic, and costs have been expected to continue falling for at least the rest of this year, according to a construction outlook that JLL put out for the second half of 2020. Do you think cost savings would be significant enough to spur additional development during these uncertain times?
We certainly tried to talk to our clients about the opportunity that is existing right now. The competitive nature of the market, both with general contractors and subcontractors, have definitely driven costs down. So looking back at the last 36 months, there's probably not a better time to greenlight projects if financially your organization can handle it. Commercial real estate is always a tough market to predict in the short term. So for us, you know, we do have the opportunity to advise clients. A lot of our clients right now need, that's what one of our main tasks is regarding the pandemic is, what are our options right now? What can we do differently and what can we afford? And that really boils down to doing the cost exercises for them to understand, you know, looking at de-densifying their office, their workplace, you know, looking at restaurants with more outdoor space, you know, taking into account what the immediate knee-jerk reactions are to the pandemic and what they can do quickly to try to improve their space or to take new space. So we work alongside our partners and help them with those budgeting exercises to make real estate decisions, you know, for what works best for their lease agreements, their land purchases, and their business operations. But absolutely, any opportunity that exists, we've always, you know, been an advocate to help our clients get these projects greenlit. Design firms, I think, are interested in expediting their process. We do have the access. We're starting to gain more access to some of that workforce now in the cycle that we're in. So we continue to advise anything that can be pushed up into, you know, the fourth quarter this year, first quarter next year, is definitely an opportunity for lower cost projects.
Now I would like to speak a little bit to specific asset classes that Origin has quite a wealth of experience in. I would like to start with office space. Prior to the pandemic, office space had long been trending towards denser, more open layouts. How much is this now actually changing, and how much further will it change going forward?
So the team at Origin has specialized in corporate office interiors for nearly two decades. As a result of the pandemic, we've definitely been looking with our clients at reducing density. It becomes a question that's almost changing weekly because, of course, they don't want to reduce productivity. And obviously, they're buying or leasing space based upon their needs. So it's a common question that's coming up quite frequently. What we're doing is really working with them to look at multifunctional areas. Areas that could be changed, let's say it's a conference room, it can be changed into an open office work area with desks that could be combined together if you were going to have the conference room usage, but also separate if there were individual workstations. So I think more of an open office plan where it's multifunctional and desks aren't necessarily fixed, but can be moved around into different areas. There's definitely different types of floor plans as well as separation areas that we've been looking at with clients coming into, you know, reception areas where there's enough space to do health screening, temperature checks, and those types of things. You're separated from the office space so that if somebody did come in and they didn't meet the, you know, the health check, that they're not inside the office infecting everybody to a point where, you know, there's concern. So a lot of separation areas, a lot of open areas, multifunctional areas, and of course, you know, built-in, you know, technology areas where you could meet with a small group, but the technology is there to do, you know, video conferencing calls for people to work together, even if it's virtual or a hybrid of both.
You mentioned technology, and I want to drill a bit more into that. How can technology enable safer office environments?
So we've definitely already started with HVAC. That's one of the mechanical parts of the system, the MEP system of an office space that can definitely be changed or upgraded for safety and health benefits right away. And that's installing UV lighting. So UV lighting will kill airborne contaminants. It's put right inside the air handler. So as the air cycles through, it literally hits that UV light. And the UV light takes care of, you know, everything that you don't want that's floating around in the air as far as germs. So that's something that we've been doing right away. And it's quite simple to retrofit those units and install that UV light. When there's new units being installed, it's something that can be purchased, you know, from the factory so that when it comes on site, you know, it's ready to go and be installed. The other is thermal sensing cameras, which either at the entry of a building or the entry of an office, which will essentially detect the heat temperature of an occupant and determine within levels of they're safe to enter the building, obviously seeing if there's a fever present. And then if there is, you know, that individual would be, you know, flagged by, you know, the new concierge health personnel. That's something that we've been seeing a little bit of, is just really in the health station. It's not really the receptionist or the secretarial station, but it's more of a health concierge personnel who's doing these checks.
I'd like to talk a little bit about office amenities. What health and wellness amenities are office tenants seeking out these days? And do you think that shared amenities are likely to completely become a thing of the past?
We actually have seen a huge boost in increase on the shared amenities. So because it's something that all office spaces use to compete with one another to try to gain tenant attraction. Health and wellness amenities are more of an operational decision than construction. I mean, typically, you know, we'll have some involvement if it's a, you know, first generation space or a development building that has no amenities or, you know, that's being designed on the front end. But, you know, on the design side and the construction side, it's more, our focus on the construction side is more based on the density of the layout and reducing headcount. So we don't get involved too much, obviously, with tenant operations. But shared amenities, like everything else, you know, I think it's just a rethinking of how to accomplish it. So our team at Origin has been actively helping asset ownership teams plan and budget for much larger, exciting outdoor amenity areas for office tenants. You know, a lot of office buildings had their outdoor, maybe picnic tables or benches and kind of these small sitting areas. We've already started working with multiple asset managers in the area to plan and bid. And we're working actually, hopefully, without knocking on wood, building one soon, some large outdoor park type amenities, things that are not typically found in South Florida. They're typically found up north, but have everything from, you know, the yoga areas, dining, putting greens, and kind of just an activity and social kind of park area built within the corporate properties, so that it expands the outdoor usable space for the tenants. They gain amenities during this time and not lose amenities.
Thanks, AJ. We've talked a lot about standard office properties, but I'd like to look at medical office as well. And I know that you have some experience in this field as well. What shifts are you seeing occurring there?
Well, with medical, I think the biggest shift that we're currently seeing is the attraction to single tenant properties, rather than some of these multi-tenant medical office buildings. So we're currently working with a national, very, very large medical company right now that is basically expanding heavily and rapidly throughout the country. So we're having them work on, you know, whether it's standalone buildings or kind of like the shopping center type property approach, where there are no, you know, common area lobbies, elevators, anything like that. So the most immediate change is for them is when they get into these properties, they don't have to worry about common areas and other tenants, but they focus on maybe larger, more spread out waiting areas, able to take on multiple patients. You know, it impedes on their footprint of their exam rooms and their treatment areas, but it's necessary to accommodate large number of patients. That's the biggest trend. I mean, we all know, you know, most medical facilities have a lot of requirements. Medical office also has a lot of requirements when it comes to the type of design and type of construction to keep the facilities sanitary. So a lot of this, again, has to do with design and layout. Sometimes those discussions Jay brought up about like UV lighting, things that aren't typically clients don't like to spend the money on. They find, you know, it hasn't been necessary in the past. It's just at the forefront of the conversation now when they're designing new buildouts.
Jay, you had spoken a bit about, as AJ said, the UV lighting retrofits. And looking at on the whole, how do costs generally compare between updating existing space with developing new space with those precautions in place?
So as far as, or in relation to the HVAC, you know, UV lighting, it's not a significant cost. That's one of the reasons why it was implemented right away. We had most of our mechanical subcontractors getting calls to go in and retrofit, you know, hotels right away, offices, as well as residences. So it's something that was started right away just because the cost is not so overbearing, you know, and you know that it's making a big difference. As far as other costs with the changes of an office layout or a tenant build-out layout, I think the costs relate back to, you know, density and productivity. So if your office space was going to house, you know, 100 people, and now you've brought it in half to 50 people, you know, the other 50 people are working at home. So you're talking about staggered shifts. So really building the space in a more open floor plan, maybe you have less walls, so there's a little bit less cost there. Some of the standards of technology that need to be put in place and that are being incorporated into smaller huddle rooms or spaces where you can, you know, virtually speak with somebody, or a hybrid model where maybe you have one other person with you and then everybody else is, you know, virtually on the call or in the meeting, you know, that technology tends to raise costs a little bit. So I think overall, you're probably talking about a 20% increase just bringing in these safety protocols into the workplace.
As demand for single-tenant space grows, how can large multi-tenant properties stay competitive?
I believe that the cost and location to be in the urban core will always overcome the competition of surrounding area single-tenant options. You know, they can't ignore the current need for health and safety of their tenants, obviously, but I believe every building owner in the country is currently looking for any and all solutions to help make their building safer for their tenants. So we are working with landlords outside the urban core that have properties where, you know, a lot of people that are transient that come into the city for their workforce, where they're now building, you know, satellite options for their workforce in these suburban areas. So we're working on smaller, sometimes still multi-tenant, sometimes single tenant, but smaller facilities. And with that 50% capacity or 75% capacity that Jay was speaking to for tenants, what they do is they basically take that rotating schedule, and maybe not everybody's at home, but they offer these smaller, less dense satellite options that are closer to their home, and they can use that as part of their rotation. But if, you know, the cost of constructions is down, and landlords are obviously motivated right now to, you know, attract tenants with low rent rates, TI allowances to help for the cost of their build out. We're doing a lot of turnkey opportunities for the same landlords where they want to just turn over a nice spec space of a few thousand feet, and that can house a little bit of that workforce that's coming outside the urban core and working into these outside areas into smaller standalone or single tenant buildings.
Tell me about a recent project that you've worked on in the office sector.
Yeah, the example that I was going to give was the Gensler office, which we're now getting ready to start building in the Wynwood district. So this will be their Miami, South Florida headquarters. Any kind of post-pandemic or during pandemic measures, you know, they're the ones looking at this, because obviously whatever their office looks like, the things that they found to work for these safety protocols are going to be implemented into their new design. So definitely an open reception area, which is a little bit larger in size and yet segregated with anti-germ screens. So it's somewhat of a decorative screen, but it segregates that reception area. So while the health check and the screening is going on, that individual is not yet allowed to go into the office space. Whereas typical reception areas are open, and the moment you walk into the office, you can kind of see into the office space. This is, segregated by those screens. The next big change is some of their huddle areas. They have several areas which have banquet booths to where you can sit and you can set up your laptop and you can work, and you can work in a larger group, or there's actually movable walls that come out. It's like a pocket door that roll out to segregate smaller areas or open it up and have a larger area. There's much less density, so a lot of the open office space has furniture that can be moved around. Definitely the conference room area changed dramatically. Now it's going to be smaller tables, which can be moved around in a lot of different uses to be able to either have huddle areas, single individual desks, or if you needed to push them all together to have somewhat of a learning center in there, you could. And that's really the point. You know, you don't want to take out the density and not have the ability to add it back in when it's required. So it's really a nice, beautiful floor plan with a lot of design, a lot of ceiling changes. Even though there's not that many walls, the ceilings kind of break up the different areas and a lot of technology. So those are the changes that we've currently seen in the Gensler office, and we're excited to start that project in a couple weeks.
Oh, it sounds very interesting. Let's shift to retail. Many retailers were already facing some pretty challenging times before this pandemic started. How can a store adapt or even thrive in the new normal?
Well, with retail, you know, I think you look at it, if a restaurant can survive, I know a lot of them have struggled the most, I think, during the pandemic, but, you know, a retail store can as well. I mean, the market has already, you're right, taken a huge swing away from large box stores and foot traffic due to the growth of online commerce. So, you know, the small storefronts will still have foot traffic in the right areas as before, you know, high tourist areas, high urban core areas, you know, fashion areas. But, you know, they'll have to do so with those social distancing protocols for the foreseeable future. So far, the density discussion for our retail clients has not been a huge concern because I don't think we're, you know, we're at least our clients, and we do a lot of luxury retail. So our experience is in less dense stores, even if they're large stores. We've done, you know, Prada's and Miu Miu's and these like big, you know, luxury brands. They spend the money on their flagships, but they're never, it's not packed. I think that market is, in my opinion, I think we're not seeing as much of a, you know, a scared clientele, but economy-wise, they're just kind of waiting on pulling the trigger with some of their projects to kind of see how things are going to turn and when.
With many states beginning to allow indoor dining once again, how can restaurant owners and operators rework their existing space?
Well, this is one we definitely spend a lot of time with. We have a very successful restaurant and retail division. Right now, the restaurants are pretty busy, but this is everyday conversation is how do we increase our outdoor dining area? That's really what it comes down to. Restaurants now, their calculations, if they were to cut their density in half or even by 25%, you know, I know as we're doing different phased rollouts in our state, they're having to do minimal business. Bars are still not okay in Miami-Dade County. So the businesses are having to rework their headcounts. And the only way they can do it is by increasing their outdoor footprint. So there's been obviously a lot of makeshift sidewalk type areas, you know, to come up with ways to put their tables outside. But projects that are underway or are in the planning stages are exploring shifting the locations of their storefronts. I mean, sometimes the footprint is increasing 100%. We have a client right now that had a 3,000 square foot dining area that is looking at a 6,000 to 7,000 square foot new design. And that was obviously a project that was designed prior to the pandemic. It never took off on the original schedule. So they have the time right now to make those decisions. So that's been the biggest change, because at the end of the day, when it comes to construction on restaurant, it really has to do with the layout. I think everything else on under health and sanitizing procedures and measures are done on the operations side of the restaurant.
Okay. Have you seen anything like kitchen reconfigurations or similar layout changes in the back of the house as a result of the pandemic?
The biggest discussion when it comes to the kitchen is clients that were gearing towards an open kitchen concept. And it's been obviously a successful trend over the years. It's an exciting opportunity for restaurateurs to engage their patrons with their kitchen. But I think having, just like Jay was saying, in the office space, having these areas that are currently, you know, able to be segregated, separate for safety measures, maybe it can be changed later. But I think right now that's the biggest change is, you know, you're losing that open kitchen concept to the patrons, keeping the area spread out. But I think the discussion also goes with the footprint. I think having a bunch of staff condensed in a small area is not safe, regardless, you know, if they're in the back of house or not, they're with the food. So everything has revolved around density and kind of spacing things out. That goes for the kitchen as well.
Okay. And my last question would be, can you tell me about a project you've been involved with where retail space needed to be significantly reconfigured or altered due to the health crisis?
We have one project that is an extreme measure for retail This is a little outside the box. Permitting hasn't gone through yet, but they're working with the design team now. But it's a smaller storefront retail store that has a couple thousand square feet. So, you know, one of these very, you know, inside of a ground floor of a high rise, how do they use the same mentality that like the restaurants are using and the offices is using? And they are actually working now on moving back the storefront facade itself. What would it take to take the storefront off the street and push it back 30, 40 feet into the building so that their indoor space, their footprint is reduced and they have this outdoor breezeway? It's covered, you know, it'd be dry, but it would be open air. So we thought that was really cool because that's something that it would never even cross the mind of an operator or tenant to take away from their air conditioned footprint. And how does a retailer work with outdoor space? So they're working on, you know, security measures, comfort level for their tenants. South Florida's, you know, obviously we have a hot, humid climate. So all of those discussions come into play, but it's a very cool way of thinking if they really do want to reduce their indoor space and still have the ability to comfortably have, you know, patrons in their store and feel safe about it. So that's when we're currently doing the exploratory due diligence on for them, and we'll see where it goes.
AJ and Jay, thank you both so much for being here with me today and for sharing your insights across what's happening in both the office and retail sectors. I hope you'll join us again sometime in the near future. Until then, visit cpexecutive.com for the latest commercial real estate news.